Welcome back. This is Mark Stein, and we're going to continue our conversation about Martin Luther King and reflections on his life, but how it affects the 21st century. Reminding you on our way back to this conversation that the Mark Stein Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to Common Core, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's one word, MarylandEducators.org. And you can also go up to our website, SteinerShow.org, and click on their banner. All the contact information is there as well. We come back here with Keith Snipes has remained with us, and Dr. Theo Harris is going to stay with us for just a few more minutes. And we are joined by three younger people from our community who are all active in changing what is going on around them. Destiny Watford is with us. She's a freshman at Towson University, resident of the Brooklyn Curtis Bay, member of the United Workers Free Your Voice Human Rights Committee that's fighting the Energy Answers incinerator in their working class community. We're going to hear that story, that struggle. Babatunde Salam is with us. Once again, Baba is filmmaker and advocacy leader for New Lens, and winner of a Peace First Prize for his efforts to improve communication between police and youth here in Baltimore City. And Donya Johnson is back with us. She's a student leader with the Intersection Youth Project and has worked on the listening campaign that looked at the impact of gun violence on our communities in Baltimore, and joins us once again here. Good to have all of you with us here. And the number here is 410-319-8888. And Dr. Theo Harris, I know you got to roll here in a minute, but I just wanted to, appreciate you getting up so early in the morning. to be with us, because it's California time.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I just we have these young people in the studio, and you, the book you wrote on Rosa Parks was just so important in terms of her continued relationship with young people and their efforts to make radical change in America. Could you speak to that for a moment in terms of that period then and now, before we start with our young people?
So, one of the things that Rosa Parks is committed to across her life is both the sense of the importance of young people, their activism, their spirit. She, like Ella Baker, really holds out a tremendous amount of hope and inspiration for young people. In many ways, she feels her generation is too complacent. So in the 1950s, even before her bus stand, she is running the youth branch of the chapter. She's been very discouraged by the kind of lack of activism. She and a small group of adults have been pressing around issues of segregation in Montgomery, but it has mostly gone nowhere. This is the decade before her bus stand, and so she's really looking to young people in this period, and she is running her youth chapter. Fast forward into the 1960s. By the 1960s, the Parks are living in Detroit. She is taking part in and supporting sort of a new group of young people, what we might call Black Power young people, in their struggles to, again, economic justice and the war in Vietnam, criminal justice, independent Black political power. Then fast forward again to the 1980s, she starts her own institute, as she co-founds it with Elaine Steele. Part of why she starts that institute is to work with young people that, again, she said adults have gotten too complacent, and so she wants to found a group that is, about taking the struggle forward, and she sees that work being done by young people. So over and over and over, Rosa Parks both sides with young people, works with young people, really takes hope in young people, and loves their spirit.
And I think that it's also critical to remember that those of us from that era who were in the movement, we were 19, we were 17, we were 20 and 21 years old, going to jail and standing up to end segregation to organize poor people and the right to vote and registering to vote. So it is young people. And I think that's why we have these young people in the studio now.
I just want to say, can I say one more thing?
Yes, Stan.
Which is that I think then we've gotten this view of Rosa Parks that is sort of fundamentally uninteresting, that's been made uninteresting to young people because she gets reduced to being this right, passive, tired seamstress on a bus. When the actual Rosa Parks, right, is a much more formidable, right, model of how you live a life of activism and the importance of young people, right? And yet what young people get of Rosa Parks is a very, you know, whitewashed, stripped down, boring, because again, she just is, it's the, you know, the tired feet or the just one day, the accidental, as opposed to a person who spent her life
committed
working for racial and social justice.
Dr. Jean Theo Harris, it's always great to have your voice in this airwaves. Professor of Political Science at Brooklyn College, author of the incredible book, The Rebellious Life of Mrs. Rosa Parks. Thank you once again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And I want to turn before Chief, I know you want to jump, but I do, because I know Destiny only has a few minutes here. She has to jump out and get back. But so, Destiny, I mean, the three of you are involved in things. You're involved in a grassroots struggle at this moment on the east side of the southeast side of our world, yep, here in the Baltimore area, in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Talk a bit about what's going on there and what you're struggling with. And then, Keith, you can jump in. I just wanted to let Destiny start.
Right. So I'm a member of a group in Brooklyn called For Your Voice, and we work out of a high school. And we've been fighting, for the past year, we've been fighting the construction of the nation's largest trash burning incinerator from being built in our own neighborhood. And it was such, like, a long journey. And when we first learned about the incinerator, it was in the back of a newspaper, and it was just so demoralizing that something this terrible is being built in our backyard. We didn't know anything about it until that point, despite the fact that the project was going on for years. And so we just devoted all of our time to learning more about the issue and the history of the incinerator and why they want it and why here and why now. And when we found out more details, we were in utter shock, and we didn't want it to happen, and we reached out to a bunch of people. And the worst part of it all was that we just kept getting denied. For example, we reached out and we wanted to get a health impact assessment done on their neighborhood to see how much pollution already existed and how much pollution the incinerator would add to the problem. And they said, oh, no, sorry, we can't help you because the project is already going to start construction. And that was really painful. And we just kept reaching out, and we reached out to the company, to other people and other allies, and we just kept getting denied. Well, not by our allies, but when we tried to reach out for more help, we kept getting denied. And so we just, it was kind of, you know, it really hurt because we were a bunch of high school students. We were trying to change something in our community, but no one was helping us, so we decided to take matters into our own hands. And we went out into the community, and we told them about what was going on. And the community, like us, didn't know anything about the project, which just sucks and is terrible. And they deserved to know. And we decided to take this project and the whole process to another level. And we reached out to media, and we wrote to, you know, newspapers and stuff to get more attention to say, hey, this is happening, and we need to change what's going on. And so we kept going on that process, and we kept learning more about the incinerator as we went on. But during the summer, we got a really great opportunity, and the incinerator missed their construction deadline, and this would mean that any construction beyond that point would be illegal. And that's when we really decided to attack this thing. And we reached out to even more people, and we got more attention. And we said, our big message is that we can stop this, and no one's going to stop us from trying to stop this, because this is our voice, and you're not going to silence us anymore. And so I think that's really powerful in what Rosa Parks and what Martin Luther King believed in, you know, young people coming together and people who aren't, Curtis Bay is a really poor area, and so it's not like people from the outside coming in. We're doing grassroots help. We're grassroots. Working in our own community. Yeah, we're working in our own community,
and
too.
And I think it's important what you all have done here. I want to lay that out here, because this is a poor working class community, interracial poor working class community, young people coming together in a high school from both races to say, we're stopping this, and convincing the adults it has to be stopped. Putting there and getting out there. This is the core of, I think, what, if you do, if you can remember in King and what he meant, is not just remember some of the speeches, but to actually do the things that we're doing, that you talk about doing, which is out there organizing and getting it done.
I just, Destiny, I just want to say, first of all, Curtis Bay is so lucky to have you. But I want to know, as a young person, how, what was your inspiration to, you speak so clearly about the issue, you speak with passion. What was your impetus to get involved with this issue?
That's a really good story. I actually went to go see a play with the group and a larger group of students. And the play was called An Enemy of the People. And it's basically about two brothers fighting to save a hot spring.
Oh, at Center Stage, the Ibsen, mm-hmm. The play was based on Ibsen's play, right.
And so Greg, who's one of the members of United Workers in the group that I'm in, came over to me and he's like, hey, you know, something similar is going on in Curtis Bay. And I'm like, are you serious? And then he shows me the newspaper article and I'm like, this is crazy. And I was just so angry that I didn't know anything about the project. And it's been going on for years, and I lived there my entire life. And so that's why I'm so passionate and so frustrated and angry, and I just want it to stop.
I want to introduce, and then, Errol, we're going to get to your phone call. I know you've been holding on for like 25 minutes from the last half hour. I want to get your thoughts in here, and other people at 410-319-8888. But so talk a bit about, for a moment, Babatunde and then Donya, what has motivated your push to want to become activists for social change in this community?
What motivated me? Well, it's just being a member of the community. I mean, it's you know, just when you're educated, when you're aware and you're cognizant of what's going on in your community. I just wasn't raised in a spirit of feeling cynical or futile. Like, you know, it's, I guess I've been blessed to have a community and support system where people and encourage me to be empowered and to not just I guess sit back. None of the people that I admire do that, and I don't think even in your own personal life, you know, you can't let people walk over you, or you can decide, you know, I'm going to do something different. You know, it's really that simple.
Well, I grew up in Baltimore City, and I didn't have my mom and dad with me because my mom was addicted to drugs and my dad was incarcerated for the first 13 years of my life. So it was no guidance there. Then I did have like this one awesome support beam who was my cousin, and he always supported me and always took care of me and always provided for me. Even throughout me being in the foster care system and all that. And one day, you know, he was involved in drug activity and gang violence and just a lot of stuff while dealing with his, you know, childhood and the things that had happened to him. And while being in the gang that he was in, a rival gang member shot him 6 times and he bled to death. So that is my inspiration. You know, I had this person in my life who was so powerful, who was so amazing, who would have made the best activist. You know, a person who didn't get the opportunities that he deserved, and a person who grew up in violent homes when, you know, there was a system in place that should have protected him. So looking at him and stories like his, I'm inspired every day to get up and push harder than I did the day before.
Donya, almost leaves you speechless.
Yeah.
Every time you tell that story.
In fact, it does leave you speechless.
It does. Yeah. I want to open the phones here and let people join this conversation. And just talk about, we're going to read some pieces from King. I want to see what the three of you think about what these things say to where we should go. I don't know if you, maybe look over this, Keith. Maybe you'd like to read this one. I'll read another one.
Okay.
And I'll read the piece from his high school speech. And this is another piece. Maybe you can look at that. Let's go to the phones. We're doing that.
Sure.
410-319-8888. Errol, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hey. Good morning. I'm just giving you a little bit about myself. I'm 20-year-old bus operator. I'm an immigrant from Jamaica. And just calling to tell you guys I really appreciate the program because really showed me a lot. I've learned a lot today, and I've learned the last 3 or 4 parades that I've been to at MLK Boulevard. And I was really fortunate when I started my job to have a professor from Penn State that really educated us about our history. Because I guess unfortunately, I really didn't have that in school in Jamaica. Because I came here when I was 17, so I graduated high school. And just wanted to call and let you know I really appreciate the program. And just kind of fight the good fight, I guess.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for holding on for so long. I appreciate it. I really do. With your words. You want to read that key? Then we'll start with Destiny because she's got a role in like 5-10 minutes. You got a class, right?
No.
I have to
go to school, though.
You got to go to school.
It's not always about class, you know?
It's always about class.
This is always... Okay, I'm going to leave that alone. So this is from the I Have a Dream speech, part of the speech that we tend to ignore outside of those four little words. And Mark, I'm not going to read this in character. I'll read this because the words stand alone. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we have come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. Let me read that part one more time.
Please.
We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all God's children.
What's your response to that, Destiny? What do you think when you hear that?
I think he's absolutely right in that peace was really, really powerful. And I think, you can't, when you see there's something wrong with society or in your own life, you can't wait for a change to just happen. You have to do it now, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that we're all doing in this room. And I think that's really important that we're doing that. And I'm glad that we're following in the ideals and the goals that Dr. King had in mind.
Baba?
I just
leap in. Come on.
What I've noticed is, they're just always the moderate, and I guess in the conversation, anytime you're talking about instigating change and or initiating change, is there's always somebody to tell you, like you said, gradualism. It's okay. We'll slowly but surely get there. And without that fierce, tenacious need for change immediately. People will always just say, well, there's always time. And that time may never come. So that's what I get from that.
Mm-hmm. I think when I hear that speech, I think of just the power and the organizing that went behind, such an insane movement. An insane movement of people who were like constantly called insane, constantly called crazy, constantly written off. This group of people who were marginalized every day, all the time, by their neighbors, their friends, people from their churches. they moved on. They continued. They pushed forward. And, you know, they met some of the goals that they had in mind, the biggest goals. I think of Dr. King's connection between racial and economic injustice. Dr. King said that racial and economic injustice are inseparable twins. That, you know, you can't look at racial injustice and not look at the injustice that people in lower classes suffer from. I think of my own personal experiences going to a public school last year, and for, you know, since like fifth grade, the way the school is tore up and broken down. And then I think of just recently me getting a scholarship to go to a private high school, and I look at, you know, the difference in the facilities, and it disgusts me, you know?
Just the
differences and the disparities and the inequalities that we see every day, you know, is what I think of when I think of Dr. Martin Luther King. Not stopping where he left off, but moving forward as a community and really acting and not talking too much, you know, and not, you know, just trying to marginalize other groups and not doing any of that, but moving forward as a community that wants to develop and grow.
I tell you, Bobby, if you want to say something, you can please, both the Alderman Destiny, because I know we have to leave in a few minutes, so maybe we'll start with you, because I think I'll just say this real fast, and Destiny, please jump in. Listen to the three of y'all. I mean, this is where the hope comes from to me.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
so
indeed.
I love it. But Destiny, go ahead. This final thought, which you just heard, Dawn, I'm just curious how you want to respond to her.
Yeah. First of all, even what you just said, I think you're absolutely right. And when it comes to, I think a lot of issues in America and in a lot of places are, we think that it's like personal, personal failures. And then that's what leads you to poverty. Oh, you have this because you just made a couple of mistakes and you shouldn't have made those mistakes. And then you wouldn't have this issue or problem. But really, it's a structural problem. And I think we can't blame it on like on personal mistakes when there's a bigger problem that needs to be fixed. And I think you're right, because a lot of my friends come from like wealthier neighborhoods, and I've seen the schools that they go to, and then when it comparison to like my high school or the school that I have gone to in the past, it's insane, and it is disgusting, and it really frustrates me, because just because they're from a higher economic status than I am, or from anyone that I know, they get more benefits, and that's not okay.
Right. We have to take a break here. I'll come back to Babatunde's thoughts as well. We're going to go to break here with Nina Simone, a part of her song for Mississippi Goddamn, where she takes on the notion of gradualism. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You are going to die and die like flies. I don't trust you anymore. Keep on saying, go slow. Go slow. But that's just the trouble. Desegregation. Mass participation. Unification.
Oh, yeah. Life is bad.
Etta James, Stormy Weather, died on this day. We remember Etta James with her music during our breaks. We are here with three young activists from our community. Keith Snipes and I are. Keith is staying with us the entire 2 hours, who, of course, comes on the show often. He's an actor, narrator, writer, social commentator. We'll be linking to his new work on the King's Monument that we played for you at the very top of this program about an hour and a half ago. Here in the studio with us right now are Babatunde Salam, a student here at Morgan State University, filmmaker and advocacy leader for New Lens, winner of a Peace First Prize for his efforts to improve communication between police and youth in Baltimore City. Donya Johnson is a student leader with the Intersection Youth Project. She worked on the listening campaign that looked at the effect of gun violence has had on our communities here in Baltimore. And Destiny Watford is with us, a freshman at Towson University and resident of the Brooklyn Curtis Bay, and a member of the United Workers Free Your Voice Human Rights Committee that's fighting the energy answers incinerator in her community in Curtis Bay, 410-319-8888. Now, you had a question for everybody. Why don't you lay that question out? Destiny has to get rolling here, but so we'll let her answer the question first.
So I'll be real quick. I just want to, you all, you are very inspirational, and I just want to get some sense of, amongst your peers, how much of the passion and awareness and concern and commitment that you all represent, how much representation of that, all of those things, do you see amongst your peers? Mm. Is it rare, or is it the common, or is it that old adage, birds of a feather flock together?
Other than my peers in the group, it just kind of seems nonchalant. And then, but for example, we just had a big event where we walked, marched like from the school to the incinerator site where it would be. And a whole bunch of people came out, and they seemed really, really passionate. A bunch of students came out. A lot of my peers came out. And it's kind of like wibbly-wobbly, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think very few of them, it would seem, is as passionate as I or other members in the group, but they all come out for this really big event that affects us all. So, I don't know. It's kind of confusing and interesting to look at. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
So I want to answer your question in like a story almost. So I've been doing a piece based on the ACLU's recent studies about how marijuana disparities are an arrest between black and white communities. And so the film, you know, made me have to investigate, you know, just what's going on in my community and other communities. And basically because, you know, black and whites use marijuana at basically comparable rates. In fact, however, black people are arrested at three times the rate of white marijuana users. And in fact, what I was noticing was that there were so many intelligent and passionate black people who were basically marginalized, discredited for the work that they were doing. There's a young man in the film that I'm making, in which he has several certifications in fiber optic installation. You know, he has he was a tow truck. He got certified in all types of fields. Mm-hmm. Yet this man is barred from working in any field, basically, he was saying that he's been unemployed for years. And it's not that people aren't passionate about what's going on in their communities. I don't think that's true. I think that so often people have been basically cynical based on their employment, based on poverty. And
survival.
Survival. Mm-hmm. And seeing their parents before them also without work for years. That has an effect on the psyche. That forces people it doesn't force people, but it often subjugates people to this feudalism that it's just not going to work out for me. So a lot of my friends are passionate about what's going on. It's just I think we're all looking for the right method of attacking this huge issue of racism and white supremacy and poverty in the same in this city and across this nation.
I feel like as, you know, community organizers and activists, we too often try to force people into things they're not interested in. I feel like our job is to look at, you know, that individual's passion, that individual's self-interest, what that individual wants to do, and not to force them to, you know, if they're interested in doing a gun violence campaign, we shouldn't force them into doing something around the environment because that's not where their passion lies. So I feel like as a person trying to, you know, better my community and develop Baltimore, my job is to help people find where they can, like, exercise their passions. And that's what I do with my friends. So instead of trying to force them into doing what I'm doing, I say, well, you know, you're not interested in what I'm doing, but you have to do something, right? Because I hear you complain every day at lunch. I hear you complain every day in class. I hear you complain in the bathroom, at the locker, everywhere, and I'm just sick of it. So this is somewhere where you can exercise that, right? This is somewhere where you can put all that anger and stress and anxiety into and work with it. So I think, you know, I won't say all of my friends are aware, but I'll say that, like, I feel like every individual has some activism in them, right? Every complaint, every word of distrust, all of that, that's like something that can be molded into activism. So,
I know, Destiny, you have to go.
Yeah.
It's good. Oh, good to have you in the studio. Destiny Watford is freshman at Towson University and from Brooklyn, Curtis Bay, where she's helping lead the United Workers Free Your Voice Human Rights Committee, fighting the incinerator in her community. Thanks for being with what you brought to the station today, our show and our program.
Thank you so much. It was nice meeting all of you.
Thank you,
nice
Destiny. It was wonderful meeting you
as well. And I was thinking as you were walking out about your answer to this question, and you know, I think that movements are always like that. There are a few activists who really push the issue, and masses come in around at some points for various reasons, and it's always going to be the few. It doesn't mean that consciousness isn't growing among others. But it always takes the activist.
And if we bring this back around full circle, Mark, Dr. King's underlying philosophy was that of personalism. You know, how does this affect one at the personal level, where the personality manifests itself? So, and that's what you were talking about this idea of what are you passionate about? What is it that inspires you to move from complaining to action? And I think that we all have an obligation to find that, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's why I wanted to ask that question, or wanted that question answered.
That's a great question. Yeah. I think that you know, that you all are examples of what is changing the world, and why, you know, people always tell me the young people are not involved. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I keep telling you need to get out there and meet some more young people, because a lot of young people are involved.
Stop
telling me they're not involved, and you are the future of that. I mean, this is interesting. This is a speech. Then we're going to play another clip from King to have your response to that. The last clip we have that we're going to queue up. But let me read this piece for you, and then you'll hear a little Marian Anderson singing America, because it says Marian Anderson was one of the great singers of our world in the 19th. 20s, 30s, and 40s in America, who was denied the right to sing by the Daughters of the American Revolution. And King in 1944 was the valedictorian in his class. And on the day to the speech, he was almost arrested, because on the bus there, mm-hmm. with his teacher, who was helping prepare the speech, the bus driver told them to move to the back of the bus, because white people came on the bus, and King refused to move. And it took the teachers forcing him to go back, because they didn't want to be arrested. They didn't want to have a chance to give his speech that day to the other students. And so part of his speech, he said this, and this has to do with Marian Anderson. He said, "Black America still wears chains. The finest Negro is at the mercy of the meanest white man. Even winners of our highest honors face the class color bar. Look at a few of the paradoxes that mark daily life in America. Marian Anderson was barred from singing in the Constitution Hall, ironically enough, by the professional daughters of the very men who founded this nation for liberty and equality. But this tale had a different ending. The nation rose in protest and gave a stunning rebuke to the Daughters of the American Revolution and a tremendous ovation to the artist Marian Anderson, who sang in Washington on Easter Sunday and, fittingly, before the Lincoln Memorial. Ranking cabinet members and a justice of the Supreme Court were seated about her. 75,000 people stood patiently for hours to hear a great artist at a historic moment. She sang as never before with tears in her eyes. When the words of America and Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen rang out over the great gathering, there was a hush on the 3C of uplifted vases. Black and white, and a new baptism of liberty, equality, and fraternity."
Mm.
So even as a young man your age, mm-hmm. he was there.
He was 15.
Yeah.
He was 15 at that point.
Right. That's right.
He graduated, he was 15 years
15.
Old.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
When that incident occurred on the bus.
So, you know, then I think that many activists, as yourself, start off young. And I think as a lot of us did, then it doesn't end when you get old.
Right.
You know, the struggle is a continual. What were you about to say, Donnie?
I don't know. I was just thinking about, like, how much Dr. King really pushed youth to move, you know, in Selma, in Birmingham, and all these different places where youth made the majority of, you know, the movement. You know, and just this fiery passion that was just, like, contagious. I don't know. It's just, like, mind-blowing, you know, to think about how much youth had, you know, stake in this movement and how much they really, really did move.
We have a piece of that history right here in our backyard, Dr. Freeman Hrabowski, who was one of the children that marched in the Children's March along with others in the community that he grew up with.
Birmingham, Alabama.
That Birmingham, which happened to be not too far away from, or he was friends with, one, at least one, of the four little girls
he knew them.
Who were killed I cannot think of the name of the church, but we all know the story. He was friends with them, but he's right here, right now, for our young people to reach out to and have conversations with, and he's always open to that opportunity. So let me, Mark, do I have time to ask one more question?
Yes, I do want to play a clip for them to listen
okay.
to.
Okay.
Okay, that's a question.
Okay,
feel
so
free.
What I want to know is, as we look back on Dr. King, how does history inform what you all do? Do you use it as a template for guidance? Do you use it for philosophical? You know, what does history do for you at the tender young ages that you are?
Well, I don't know if I'm so tender anymore, but
not with a name like Baba Tunde.
But I will say that, in fact, I guess I look at King in a way that's I can only look at him in hindsight, so I can't look at him in the time that he was. But I will say that, of course, he's always a powerful story, and when I read his speeches, I'm just, you know, I'm speechless. The prophecy that, not the prophecy, but I mean, I think that's a little too dramatic of a word, but just the compelling nature of his words. And also what it tells me is that it's so easy in a way for us to reduce a man to four words. It's so easy if we let people who are outside of our community or people who don't truly care about a man's message to tell the story. Because you'll see King on Fox News, and they'll play what they want you to hear.
Absolutely.
They'll play, you know, they'll show in classrooms throughout all of Baltimore's public schools and other public schools, I'm sure, of just, you know, the I Have a Dream, when it, even in that speech, you know, and then sometimes you'll see dream fulfilled, even though we know what's the truth. When, even in that speech, it says the Negro cannot be complacent as long as police brutality still exists. And, I mean, unless you've been out on the street corner, you could tell me, you know, whether or not police brutality still exists. So, I mean, it's just powerful that the importance of telling our own story with the truth, mm-hmm. you know, and letting the truth speak.
Very powerful.
I definitely, you know, think of Dr. King's speeches and all that he said, I definitely feel like a lot of what made people angry is taken out. You know, it's a lot of what invoked that passion in people is kind of brushed under the carpet because you don't hear about those things much anymore at all unless you read it yourself, right? Mm-hmm. I definitely feel like history, if you don't know how the dominoes fell, you know,
beautifully put,
then you can't really. So the March on Washington was originally called the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom.
Freedom and Equality Now, right?
Right.
Right.
So when you look at all the pieces put together, right, and you look at what's not done, then you kind of can make a checklist in your head of what needs to be done now. But I feel like because it's so, like, the picture is so sketchy, like, is a lot of pieces to the puzzle missing to people who don't just inform themselves, who just read the newspaper, or who just listen to, you know, biased media. You know, I feel like because there's so many pieces missing, people miss out on what history can do for us today. Mm-hmm. Like, thinking of the jobs campaign that Martin Luther King was pushing so hard, I think of the intersection and the jobs campaign that we push and the curriculum that we learn. And pretty much right now we're doing a youth jobs campaign, because youth make 44% of youth are unemployed in Baltimore, and that's only youth who are actually looking for a job. And we know that, you know, giving youth relationships and resources and just skills will help them to kind of be propelled into the future. And looking at history, that's been the truth. You know, an employed community is a happy community. So, you know, just looking back on history and the solutions that worked, I feel like will save us a lot of time and energy, you know, that we spend looking for solutions. They're already there.
Both of you put down here was very, very real and very powerful and to the point. I want to play a clip and talk a bit about this clip from King. I think it was one of the last clips we have up and ready. And we play a little bit of something like this earlier in the hours where King talked about his critique of the capitalist world. Mm-hmm. But I want to play this piece. But before I do the Bob, I want to ask a quick question. We're going to get right to this piece. When you were telling your story a moment ago about the man that you're in this film that you're doing, who knows how to lay fiber optics and work tow trucks and like that, were you saying he couldn't get a job because of his marijuana arrest, because of his drug conviction?
Yes.
That's what I thought. But to be clear, that was the connection you were making, yeah. But that absolutely insane.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, if a woman wanted to be a cosmetologist, mm-hmm. they couldn't do it if they went to prison. They're not allowed to get a license.
Yeah.
I mean, this is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's another story, actually, of a teacher who was on the process, already got her master's degree and couldn't. And this is a film doing for the ACLU to promote, you know, the bill in Maryland right now. Yeah.
Which we'll be talking a lot about. Maybe we'll take some clips from your film and put them on the air.
Hopefully.
We need to do that.
Yeah.
Let's hear this clip. You have the clip? We're ready, Gunn? Let's play this, please, and we'll have comments on it when we come back.
I say to you, I've also decided to stick with love. But I know that love is ultimately the only answer to mankind's problems. And I'm going to talk about it everywhere I go. I know it isn't popular to talk about it in some circles today. And I'm not talking about emotional bosh when I talk about love. There are 40 million poor people here. One day we must ask the question, why are there 40 million poor people in America? And when you begin to ask that question, you're raising a question about the economic system, about a broader distribution of wealth. When you ask that question, you begin to question the capitalistic economy. And I'm simply saying that more and more, we've got to begin to ask questions about the whole society. We are called upon to help the discouraged beggars in life's marketplace. But one day we must come to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. It means that questions must be raised.
All right. Okay, so I'm sorry, it was just jarring right there. Took me out for a minute. So I mean, your thoughts on this? And then he also went on in this speech to talk about that sometimes he was more of a socialist than anything else. He said communism doesn't answer the questions of the individual, and capitalism doesn't care about the social needs of the people. and he was calling for real radical rethinking of where we are. What are your thoughts when you hear this? Go ahead, Baba. You can jump in.
To me, it just sounds like a truth. We
simply put.
Yeah, what'd you say, Baba?
Straight up honesty, which is refreshing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think of the SCLC, which was like this council of churches that kind of really, you know, helped Dr. King push, you know, the movement that he had, all the movements, you know. I think of them, and I think of this bill that they wrote that they sent to Congress asking for all people to be able to have a job and an adequate education, among other things. And I think of, like, the first part of that bill was about the economic disparity that Black America, that minority America was facing, right? And that's what I think of, like, a country that is still based off of big business and not based off of helping the small people, not the small people, but helping people who aren't involved in those corporations and stuff.
It was interesting. This is a total digression, but maybe think of this. We're going to try to get this man on. There was a lead story in the Week in Review in the New York Times on Sunday by a young man who worked in the hedge funds, and he came from a working class family, and all he ever wanted to be was a millionaire. That's all he thought about, and so he went to work for these hedge funds, and he realized that he got addicted to alcohol and cocaine, and then he said that he realized what my addiction was to money. And he said, I was in this meeting, and after the rules were coming down, the hedge fund leaders were all like going, we oppose these rules because, and he said, I'm talking about people in this room who are multi-billionaires who had all the money they could have because they were going to lose money, and they already had billions. And he was saying, what's happened to society is capitalism has run amok, and we are addicted to money. We're addicted to the greed for money, addicted to everything that thinks that the only way you can find happiness is this way. And sometimes we all get infected with that. We can all get stuck in that. And I think that's part of what King was saying as well, that the system's values are skewed.
Capitalism, Mark, has run so amok that those iconic figures in our society who at one point could have never been subjects of attack are now subjects of attack. The moment that Pope Francis began talking about economic inequality, he was called a Marxist.
Mm-hmm.
He was called a Marxist. And his reply was, I'm not a Marxist, but I know quite a few who I like quite a bit. and when President Obama talks about in sort of the subdued way that he does, when he talks about economic redistribution, he's called a socialist. And we say socialist as if it is some profane notion. There is some legitimacy in alternative forms of economic awareness. There is some delegitimacy in capitalism, quite a bit, to be quite frank.
I'm not gonna argue.
And until we understand that, we will be where we are.
King talked about a radical redistribution of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
We played that speech in the last hour, part of that speech. Those are things you don't hear. I mean, if you two could tell the school systems now that you came out of, we have like 4 minutes left here. I want to have you. How would you tell them to design today for our students, for your peers, for the people that you?
Well, I would tell the school system, keep teaching the kids. You know, you got to learn how to either, you know, play some basketball or rap. That's the only way. You know, it's really the no. But honestly, the no. I would design the school system, or I guess not design, or is really focusing on the skills that build people who have talents, who have abilities. So often we're talking about integrating people into a current workforce. We aren't creating young people, or rarely do we create young people who are the source of other labor and creations of businesses and organizations. And honestly, you know, so we don't have apprenticeships, you know, that really get us out there. You know, even personally, you know, I just felt like when I graduated high school, even though I knew I was prepared for college, I didn't feel like I was prepared for work. And I mean, that's honestly what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's labor. It's not. So it's a lot of college prep, but is it a lot of work prep? Mm-hmm. I mean, because what is college leading to? You? More college? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is honestly what we need to be thinking about.
I think that I would tell my school, every school, that 25% of learning takes place in the classroom and the rest takes place outside of it. You know, like, I've learned more being with the intersection, me and Mark, you know, me and Anthony McCarthy, me and all these different people than I have in 17 years of being in a classroom. Because it doesn't stick. I'll learn how to do this equation one day, but because you didn't teach me in a way that I'll use every day, it doesn't stick. I feel like when I do research for different interviews and when I do research for different things that I actually use, it sticks and I learn it. I don't memorize it. I would encourage, you know, schools to take their students outside of the classroom all the time, to encourage internships. I like Crystal Ray's model. They have an internship program where the student works like every week and goes to somewhere different to like learn and stuff. So I would encourage that.
We'll pick that up another day. Zonya Johnson with The Intersection. Great to have you back again. Thank you so much. Good to have you here, Baba Nuzi Salam. It's been too long. Good to have you back in the studio. New Lens, now at Towson University, doing remarkable work. Keith Snipes, my dear friend, helping me through the last 2 hours. Good to have you with us as well.
Absolutely. Good to be here, Mark.
This was our 2-hour Martin Luther King Day special, ending with young activists in our community. Destiny Watford had to leave earlier. I'll remind you on the way out of here, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com. We are going out here with Billy Powell, Love Train. And reminding the Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. You can podcast this show and find information about our guests, the organizations they work with, by visiting us on the web at steinershow.org. You can also listen to and download all of our podcasts on iTunes. For public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Remember the real words of Reverend Martin Luther King. Take care. Get on board.